And let me welcome back the officials from the department and our own officials from the committee
for the almost 1 hour that we have taken to take a caucus. We have discussed the issues in cabinet that are holding back the minister in relation to the decision that we took that on matters of the bill, the initial presentation needed to be introduced by the minister himself or herself. And as you would remember, the same would obtain with regard to budgets. So the honourable members have said that in view of the fact that it is on a Wednesday and the minister is presenting three items in the cabinet committee, that we should proceed without her. And I have indicated that I was given two names, the name of Advocate Yvette and Attorney Daniel Steenkamp as people who will be presenting. So members have said that we accept the apology of the minister with the insistence that she must find time and come to while we're dealing with this legal process. Now today is a report. Tomorrow we may be starting with a clause by clause, and then next week perhaps with a clause by clause again. If you could find time and space, because members feel that it will be totally unfair that we deal with a law making process and the member of cabinet would not have been here while we're dealing with the legislation that comes from that department. So while we have met her halfway, I mean, she's in cabinet. It's an important responsibility. We'll see what we have. That's our message. So we're continuing. We've also discussed the matter of Friday, because according to our program, the committee must do the work today, tomorrow, and Friday. And members have intimated that due to a myriad reasons, we should not sit and proceed with our work on Friday, but that we do that next week. It will be Wednesday. It will be Wednesday, no?
Yes.
It will be Wednesday. So it means today we receive a presentation, and after that, perhaps we'll proceed to, I'm not sure, I'm not having the program with me. We'll then proceed from there after engaging the discussion, and then thereafter we'll deal with the clause by clause. Clause 1 is saying this, and this is what we're saying. Clause 2, clause 4, etc., etc. And then finish that by next week. Then finish that. So we will start tomorrow. Today it's the presentation, and then the clause by clause tomorrow, and what we're supposed to do tomorrow will be done next week, Wednesday. What we're supposed to do on Friday will be done on Wednesday. I don't know, it was the secretary whispering to me some other day that this is not a sick bill. It is possible that the ground will cover tomorrow and Friday, or the ground will cover tomorrow and next Wednesday. We're likely to finish everything. After that, just to remind all of us, the chair will then write a letter to Honorable Frolic on behalf of the committee and insist that it is very necessary that an oversight visit to the properties of the department outside the country. Now, we must not be seen to be talking about Namibia at all costs. Anywhere outside the country, based on the list, so that when we come to clause 8, we formulate a particular position, a position that inuklamola, Mr. Sibilane, a position that will mediate between public works and DERCO. Because I know for a fact that the DG and other officials in DERCO will say, we want this property. They don't have the in-house professional expertise and capacity. They don't have. That's DERCO. Money they may have. Public works, through the DG, will say, no, all properties of the state outside and inside the country belong to us. We have the right to sell and all that, kiyama, that and that. But they don't have the money. They may have the in-house expertise. They don't have the money to go and refurbish something in Russia, in Poland, all over the world. They don't have that. They were not even given money for that. So the committee in Parliament, if I could have my way, it would be that this committee sits with the Committee of Public Works and say, when it comes to this one, and here is a binding act, which is Kiyama, this is what we're recommending to both ministers or to both ministries, something like that. We've got to come to that determination, and you can only do that if you have visited, if you conducted oversight somewhere. But no, we found houses that belong to the Amba, they are lying fallow in Zimbabwe. We've seen land, we've seen that and that and that. And therefore, based on, because you're going to have a report, based on this report, this is what we're saying. Without that, but I'm speaking only for myself for now, without that, it's a problem. So if we finish our work next week, Wednesday, then we can request to go and do the oversight somewhere during the holidays, during the recess. So let's just pack it there. That's the report we thought we will bring to you. And thank you for accepting the caucus, which has already delayed us. Yeah, I think that takes care of all of the things that we've discussed. Let's hand over to, I see that Ms. Tanya Stienkamp is here. Yes.
I approach here because I don't want to be simply
interested in the meeting. I'll go out and see who the company is. Oh. Okay. Advocate Stienkamp.
Thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Member. Thank you for this opportunity to address you today. I would like to start by emphasizing that on behalf of the Minister and on behalf of DERCO, I welcome this opportunity to engage with the Portfolio Committee on this historic bill. The Foreign Service Bill will be the first legislation that is passed by this Portfolio Committee, and the Portfolio Committee should be commended for the thorough process that was followed to interrogate the bill. Over a period of more than a year, the committee has considered inputs from a number of stakeholders and have benchmarked this legislation against international best practices, and we really do appreciate the time and effort that has gone into this process. Please allow me to recap just briefly. This presentation serves as a brief introduction, whereafter we will go into specific responses on the issues raised by the committee in its report that was adopted last week. So just as a way to recap, work on the Foreign Service Bill within the department originally started in 2010, and the bill went through various consultative processes as set out in DERCO's report on consultations, which will be shared with the committee when we go through the bill on a clause-by-clause basis, that report also sets out all of the various consultations that was done in the pre-parliamentary phase on this legislation, as well as in the phase following the public consultations that was done by the Portfolio Committee. This bill went through both the GNA DG cluster and the ICTF DG cluster before proceeding to Cabinet. Organized labor was engaged on the bill both before the tabling of the bill and thereafter, And the bill was then tabled before this committee, or in Parliament, and proceeded to this honourable committee in 2015. It would be good to, if I could just remind ourselves, if we could remind ourselves of the following characteristics of the bill. The bill does not create a dispensation outside the public service, but provides for complementary legislation aimed specifically at strengthening the foreign service. The bill focuses primarily on the administration of the foreign service, South Africa's missions, and the officials that are posted to these missions for the duration of their service abroad. As such, the Foreign Service Bill resorts with DIRCO, but it is a bill that affects a specific group of officials from across government, seeking to unify them within a professional foreign service for a specific period of time. DIRCO envisions that the practical and administrative challenges that are faced in managing and administering the foreign service will be alleviated by this bill when it enters into force. The objectives of the bill is The primary objective of the bill is to further South Africa's foreign relations. It seeks to create a professional, unified foreign service under DIRCO's management, which will ensure that South Africa's foreign relations will be practiced in a more focused and efficient manner. The bill will strengthen accountability of officials and of the foreign service as a whole. Just to briefly explain the methodology that we used to respond to the issues raised by the Portfolio Committee, that we will address in the table next. DIRCO's responses to the issues raised by the Portfolio Committee has been addressed directly on that table, which is the next document that we will start to discuss. And it includes the document that is entitled the Draft Summary of Public Hearings and Written Submissions on the Foreign Service Bill 2015. In preparing our response, we applied the methodology as follows. Following each presentation that was made to the Portfolio Committee where substantive issues were raised, DIRCO engaged with a relevant stakeholder department or other stakeholders outside of government where necessary to address the issues that were raised. Often the issues were based on misunderstandings or misconceptions about the bill, and after consultations a number of issues were resolved. In some instances, DIRCO was not able to find consensus positions with stakeholders, and these instances are indicated in DIRCO's responses. DIRCO has not at this stage dealt with language and style proposals received from stakeholders. So just also to raise some salient issues which the committee is obviously aware of, and to give policy positions from the point of view of the department. And the main issues that is still in the bill and that were raised by stakeholders as well, and numerous stakeholders, is the question of which legislation between the Foreign Service Bill or the Public Service Act will prevail in cases of conflict. In our view, the two pieces of legislation are complementary, and we also have an opinion from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor within the Department of Justice confirming this. But in order to avoid any uncertainty in this regard, DIRCO has on the table made a textual proposal on a conflicts clause to be included in the bill to make the situation very clear. On the question of the authority to dispose of immovable assets, DIRCO's position is that to improve cost and time efficiency, we propose to deal with disposals as part of the larger mandate in relation to immovable assets, which DIRCO already performs. So it must be noted that DIRCO already has a contingent within the department that deals with the management of assets, the acquisition of immovable assets. We lease approximately 1,000 properties already on behalf of DIRCO and also on behalf of partner departments, and we manage approximately 125 state-owned properties at present. The only outstanding, also in as far as we understand in our consultations with the Department of Public Works, there's no contestation about the tasks that DIRCO already performs. The only matter which is being contested is the disposal of immovable assets, which will be addressed further in the table. The issue of recall as a concept used in public international law raised a number of comments from stakeholders. DIRCO acknowledges that the clause that is currently in the bill may cause misunderstandings, and therefore in the table we have proposed additional text to clarify the position. There's also been a number of comments raised on the balance between career diplomats and non-career diplomats that are being appointed as heads of mission, including questions of gender balance in the appointment. Durko's position on this is that the president appoints ambassadors in accordance with Section 84 of the Constitution, but that Durko then can and does regulate the requirements for all members of the Foreign Service in this bill. Another salient issue that was now raised by stakeholders is the provision for stakeholder consultation on issues such as the promulgation of regulations. Durko recognizes that this aspect may fall short in the bill, and as such, it can be strengthened. Our proposal to strengthen this is to do it through the mechanism that is created by Clause 7 of the bill, rather than by adding text, as will be explained in more detail during our response. There are already bodies in place, entities in place that can deal with this consultation process, and these bodies can be strengthened and given more powers in the form of regulations. There was also a question on whether the secondment of officials to international organizations should be covered by the bill. We'd like to, in this regard, to point to the Portfolio Committee to Clause 12.1F of the bill, which makes provision for the fact that secondments may be dealt with through regulations. There was also a question on the inclusion of a provision for Durko to deposit monies on behalf of partner departments directly into the National Revenue Fund, and Durko agrees with this proposal and will make a textual proposal on this when we get to that point. Finally, the final issue that was raised by a number of stakeholders is the oversight role of the Portfolio Committee. In our view, parliamentary oversight is already in place. The Minister is open to further engagements to ensure that the Portfolio Committee is briefed on a regular basis. There's, however, in our view, no need for the inclusion of additional text on this in the bill itself. We thank you again, and we look forward to detailed engagement on these issues as we proceed through our responses. So if there are no questions, I propose to directly move on to Durko's responses.
Do you want to mount the...
Chair, it depends on the committee. If you're comfortable looking on paper, then we can proceed like that.
Yeah, because remember, you've got this page. Yeah. We can use this one. We can also use the We can also use the paper before us. Proceed. Page 1, number 1, issue number 1, Ambassador Francis Molloy.
Thank you, Chair. Ambassador Molloy raised the issue that in the memorandum of objectives, the bill does not state its objectives of establishing a foreign service system in a clear and unambiguous term. Durga takes the point, but do note that the memorandum of objectives are for information purposes, and that with the introduction of the bill, clause 2.1a of the bill provides clearly for the establishment of a single foreign service. The PSCBC commented on the conflict of laws created between by the bill purporting to establish a new process for determining future conditions of service. Durka's response to that.
Sorry, let me just establish. Is that Advocate Devet?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Now you are part of us. Oh, welcome. We are making law here, no foreigners. Proceed, Stephen Campbell.
Thank you, Chair. On the conflict of laws issues, Durka notes that it's not uncommon for sectoral legislation to regulate the conditions of service of their own members. For example, Clause 29.1d of the Intelligence Services Act does exactly that. Conditions of services in this bill is addressed in Clauses 9 and 12. Clause 9 makes it clear that all policies and codes are subject to collective agreements applicable to the Foreign Service, so the bill does not move away from the current collective agreement system. Clause 12, while it doesn't expressly subject regulations to collective agreements, Currently, it also doesn't exclude a collective agreement, but Durka has no objection to clarifying this in the text. We could potentially look at text similar to that already included in Clause 9.1. The PSCBC also raises the issue of the duplication of powers between the Minister of Public Service and Durka for conditions of service. Durka notes in response that this is not an issue that is unique to the Foreign Service Bill, and we would like to, in this regard, point to Section 3.2 of the Defence Act, which does exactly the same thing. To address the potential conflict, which in our view, these two bills are complementary, but in case that there should be conflict at any point in time, we propose to include a clause, as is included there in Durka's responses, that says, subject to the provisions of this Act, the conditions of service of members of the Foreign Service must be governed by the law governing that employee's conditions of service. In other words, if you are employed in terms of the Defence Act will regulate your conditions of service. If you are appointed in terms of the Public Service Act will govern your conditions of service. Then we proceed to say where this Act conflicts with provisions of the Public Service Act 1994 or any other legislation, and it is not possible to read the conflicting provisions as complementary to one another, this Act shall prevail. The reason for this is that this Act is specifically aimed at the Foreign Service, and therefore any regulations made in terms of this Act will be specifically tailored for the needs of the Foreign Service. It is therefore appropriate that in the unlikely event that there should be conflict, that this Act should prevail specifically in relation to members of the Foreign Service. So if we recall, those are officials that are posted abroad for the time that they are abroad serving South Africa. On the PSCBC also raises the issue that the bill purports to amend various conditions of service for employees deployed to foreign missions. We again point to the Intelligence Services Act as an example of legislation that does exactly this. And therefore it is not strange or uncommon for sectoral legislation to do this. The bill makes it possible for the Minister of Durka to make regulations in relation to conditions of service, subject to consultations and subject to collective agreements. To make this even clearer, Durka proposes to include text in Clause 12 to the effect that the minister may make regulations after consultation with any other relevant national department. Chair, some of the comments are simply comments and in our view did not require a specific response. So if it is in order with yourself and with the honourable members, we propose to simply skip over those comments and address specifically those comments that we have responses that we have responses for, and if any of the members feel that there are additional comments needed, we are at any time obviously willing to answer those comments.
Member, you're comfortable with that?
Yeah.
I think she wants to be issue specific.
Yeah,
yeah, agreed.
Thank you very much. If we move down on page...
Then if you go that way, then throw ourselves to the page and the name of the issue.
Sure.
We will be better guided.
I will do so, Chair. Thank you. If we go a little bit down on page 3, at the Pretoria Public Seminar, it was mentioned that a single foreign service is needed to address hierarchy and accountability issues at the missions, and we simply point out that clause 4 of the bill specifically addresses the hierarchy by bringing all members of the foreign service located at missions under the control of the head of mission. Paging over to the first issue on page 5, an issue raised by Accord, that the bill will go a long way towards codifying and streamlining the administration and management of the Foreign Service. They then proceed to say that, if I may skip over a few lines, the bill gives an impression that only DECA will lead all matters relating to international relations. In this regard, we would like to point out that currently we have cabinet-approved measures and guidelines for the enhanced coordination of South Africa's international engagements. We have copies here for all of the members of this document, which sets out that DECA is in fact responsible for South Africa's overall foreign relations. The measures and guidelines provide for the different and complementary roles of DECA and other departments regarding international relations. And our proposal is to include these measures and guidelines in the regulations of the bill. Chair, when we take a break, we will distribute copies of this document to all the members of honourable members of the committee. A number of departments then raised the issue of consultations and the creation of an advisory committee of officials from various departments. We would like to point out that Clause 7 would make such a structure possible, and in fact there already exists a committee, a Foreign Service Dispensation Coordinating Committee at a technical level between DERCO and partner departments that discusses all of these issues on an ad hoc basis as and when required. So our proposal is that this committee continues with this role, and that it may, if necessary, be strengthened through regulations to give it additional powers.
Can you get the name of the Foreign Service Dispensation?
It's the FSDCC, so it's the Foreign Service Dispensation Coordinating Committee. It is a technical committee between officials of DERCO and all partner departments that have officials at missions. Excuse me, sir? DERCO leads it. It's at a technical level, so official level. DDG level.
DDG.
Yes. Then moving on to issue point 2 on page 5, which is the nature of foreign service in South Africa. The first issue that is raised is the professionalization of the Foreign Service and the knowledge of national interest. Clause 3 of the bill already makes provision for prescribed requirements that members of the Foreign Service must meet in order to be eligible to be posted abroad. These specific requirements will be described in regulations. There were also comments from Ambassador Moloe on the efficient, non-partisan, career-orientated professional foreign service, and he made a number of comments on the appointments of heads of mission. In DEVCO's view, the bill aims to address the concern directly. The appointment of heads of mission is, in terms of Section 84 of the Constitution, a prerogative of the President. However, the Minister can prescribe requirements that need to be met by all members of the Foreign Service before they may become part of the Foreign Service. This is what Clause 3 already provides. This can include, for example, specific training requirements, and the Department is open to further suggestions in this regard. There was a comment at the last dash of Ambassador Molloy on page 6 on the incidences where officials have been implicated in criminal activity overseas. DERCO takes note of this comment, but notes that misconduct and criminal activity is addressed both in the clause on recall and in the clause on offences. And as will be noted later on again, officials that have been found guilty of on charges of misconduct or criminal activity, this may affect their security clearance, which is a requirement that they need to have security clearance before they can be posted abroad. Moving on to the comments of Kosatu. Kosatu was concerned about the extent that the bill delegates powers to the minister to determine policies and regulations, and especially in relation to labor relations. DERCO agrees that consultation is a very important aspect of the bill. We propose that the matter be addressed through existing structures, which will be given more powers and regulations, and this will be done in terms of Clause 7 of the bill. The PSCBC, it was noted by Kosatu that it is the PSCBC that collectively negotiates public service labor regulations, relations and conditions of service. DERCO notes that the bill does make reference to collective agreements, and the bill does not seek to change the current system of negotiating, remove DERCO from the current bargaining council. It doesn't change the procedure in any way. The collective bargaining system is acknowledged, and there is no intention to change this. There was a comment that the bill is needed to enhance the professionalism and accountability of the Foreign Service. DERCO merely notes that this is, in fact, one of the objectives of the bill. We had comments from Professor van Wyk on the preamble of the bill to the effect that the preamble should be the preamble should make mention of accountability and professionalization. This is one of the objectives of the bill, is to professionalize the service in actual fact. Should the members feel it is necessary to look at the preamble and amend it, we have no objection. They do. There was a comment from the Department of Transport, from Tourism, South African Tourism, and from SARS that the bill needs to cover officials posted by state-owned entities and those that are seconded to international organizations. DERCO notes that state-owned entities do not currently have representatives at missions. Currently, only employees of government are eligible to be transferred to missions. We also note the comments in relation to secondments. We would like to appoint the committee to Clause 12.1F of the bill, which provides that secondments may be regulated through regulations, should the minister deem it appropriate to do so. We've got comments then from, we've got a number of comments on locally recruited personnel from Mr. Russell Pillay, primarily from Mr. Russell Pillay, but also from other stakeholders. The issue of locally recruited personnel cannot legally, in our view, be included either in the definition of employees or in the bill as it stands at the moment. Locally recruited personnel are regulated by the country in which they are appointed. They are not subject to South African labor legislation or, in fact, any other South African legislation. To the extent possible, DERCO can look at regulating locally recruited personnel in more detail in the regulations, but it should be emphasized, we would like to emphasize again, that LRPs are appointed and sign contracts of employment in terms of the labor legislation that prevails in the country where they are appointed.
I don't want to ground you into some details on this.
but that's for my own interest. It should be pretty difficult to sign a contract, a government contract with an LRC who is in Malaysia, the other one is in Canada, the other one is in Mozambique, the other one is in the labor employment, I think that the other now, when people like that misconduct themselves, you have to charge them, dismiss them in terms of, or not dismiss them, in terms of the labor laws, all that kind. Would you see this person has wronged South Africa in its territory? Listen, the Chemsal is a territory in foreign, and the commission of the wrongs is in your territory under your flag. But you can't deal with this person because you use the laws of another country if you actually understand. So there's a bit of a legal conundrum there. Okay. That's in the case. I'm just saying, it's interesting. They want to
be. Chair, you are absolutely correct. It is it can become quite complicated from a legal point of view on how to do these things right. Moving on to the comments of Professor Van Beek on page 8, that a specific mention should be made of section 84I of the Constitution of South Africa that gives the power to appoint heads of mission to the president. Derko has no objection to this proposal. She also made the further comment that a definition of special advisor or advisors on international relations and cooperation should be included in the bill. We would like to point out that special advisors to the ministers are appointed in terms of DPSA regulations. So there is already a regime that governs their appointment. The PSCBC considered the definitions of the foreign service and employee in the bill as problematic. This is the same comment that was made by the Department of Defense. DERCO is making a revised textual proposal in this regard. The proposal is there in the last column for members and chair to see.
Sorry, I lost the page.
Page 9, towards the bottom of the page now. So our proposal is that employees, and then we include for the purposes of this act, to make sure that there is a distinction between employee here and the use of employee in the Public Service Act. The employee for the purposes of this act means any person appointed to the department or to any other national department in terms of the Public Service Act or any other applicable legislation, and includes members of the Foreign Service in Section 2. There was a proposal that the definition of prescribed should be included in the bill. Derko agrees with this proposal. The Department of Public Works, and members will see as we go through these definitions and then also through the discussion of Clause 8, that on a number of issues, Derko and the Department of Public Works were able to find consensus. As will be pointed out later, there is basically one issue that remains outstanding. So DERCO and the Department of Public Works agree that there should be a definition of acquire in the bill as set out there by the Department of Public Works. DERCO also agrees that to the definition of immovable assets, and DERCO includes the inclusion of the definition of Kiama. DPSA has made a comment on the conflict of laws issues, which was already addressed earlier on, so merely to again state that DERCO proposes, has a textual proposal to include, as previously discussed. A number of departments raised questions on the definition of national department, and on the issue of officials being sent on posting to international organizations. We would like to point out that this is in fact not posting, but secondment, an issue which can be dealt with in terms of Clause 12.1F of the bill. South African Tourism pointed out to this committee the need to consider cases where it would be where it would not be ideal for transferred officials. Where it would be ideal for transferred officials not to be physically accommodated in the embassy. We would like to point out that South African Tourism has a specific arrangement for a specific reason. Their circumstances are different from that of national departments. In terms of the Vienna Conventions, an embassy is located in a specific, in one specific place, and the convention also regulates the staff at the embassy. And the convention also provides that no commercial activity may be conducted from the embassy. South African Tourism has a specific mandate to promote South Africa as a tourism destination, and in this context conducts commercial activity in order to reach their objectives. As such, in terms of international law, it is not possible to accommodate them in the mission. This is an issue that is clearly understood between DIRCO and the Department of Tourism and SA Tourism themselves, in fact. Moving on then to the Foreign Service at the Pretoria Seminar, it was raised that the professionalization of the Foreign Service is a key element. DIRCO comments that this Clause 3 provides for members to meet prescribed requirements that will be prescribed in regulations. Accord raises the issue of whether the bill should be referring to international relations, bilateral, regional, and multilateral, regional, and bilateral level, or whether it should be redrafted either as bilateral and multilateral, or as regional, continent, and international level. We point out that the reference to regional is important within the context of the department's foreign policy objectives. Clause 2 of the bill, this is also a comment by Accord, has excluded honorary consuls as part of what the Foreign Service should consist of. In response, DIRCO notes that honorary consuls are a specific group of persons that are governed under the Vienna Convention on Consular Relations, and that convention already resorts under the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act. The honorary consuls are not necessarily nationals of the appointing country, so they would, in South Africa's instance, not necessarily be South African nationals, and they have specific duties that are not necessarily diplomatic in nature. So they would also promote South Africa in other contexts as what diplomats may ordinarily do. There was a comment or a proposal by SIA that the Foreign Service should be, the definition of the Foreign Service should be expanded to include officials at DIRCO or other departments that are South African-based. They also propose that it should include officials from time to time traveling to missions abroad or to international conferences or conducting consultations with missions on policy operational matters. This, in our view, currently falls outside the scope of the bill as currently envisaged, and in our view, this type of proposal may actually raise the type of conflict that was brought to honourable members and the honourable committee's attention by the DPSA, conflicts with the Public Service Act or conflicts with other acts. So, as currently envisaged, the Foreign Service Bill focuses only on officials, regardless of which department they originate from, that are serving in missions abroad for the time that they are serving in that mission. There was another comment that the Foreign Service should be expanded to include special envoys. Special envoys are regarded as representatives that will be covered under the definition of heads of mission. There was also a proposal for parliamentary oversight on special envoys. DIRCO notes, as was noted in our presentation as well, that parliamentary oversight is already in place over the department and that the minister is open to further engagement to ensure that the portfolio committee is briefed on a regular basis. But in our view, there is no need to include specific text on this in the bill. There were comments from Ambassador Moloi that about national interest and foreign policy and which terms should be included in the bill and which should not. In response, DIRCO notes that the bill refers to foreign policy, which encapsulates the national interest. and furthermore that the bill does not contain any detail on what that foreign policy is, as that is an aspect that belongs within the policy sphere. There was also a comment that heads about the appointment of heads of mission and whether they can be appointed from outside the Courier Corp and whether they would still be still form part of the definition of foreign service. Our comment is that the clause provides for the appointment of all members of the foreign service, including heads of mission, which may or may not be contractual appointments. So in other words, a head of mission that is appointed from outside government is appointed on a contractual basis, and as such, the definition of the foreign service specifically includes contractual appointees, and they would therefore be members of the foreign service. There's a proposal from Professor from Van Beek, again in relation to the persons who represent South Africa on an ad hoc or permanent basis. Just to point out again that those persons that represent South Africa, either on an ad hoc basis or on international organizations, are not, as currently envisaged, members of the Foreign Service. They can, however, be regulated in terms of secondment regulations, which can be included in terms of Section 12.1F. The PSCBC made a comment that goes directly to the conflicts clause that was proposed by DOCO. We then simply include this clause again in our response. It is our proposal that this clause be included in the bill. There's again issues of the regulation of LRPs. Just to point, just to reiterate the comment again.
Can I help on this one? On the issue of the Professor Van Beek's clause 2.2, when she refers to the persons who are representing South Africa on an ad hoc or permanent basis at international organizations, it means it's those ambassadors who are based in the WTO or within the United Nations institutions, or what is the essence of that? Because in my interpretation, they would fall as ambassadors. Who do we call them?
In our understanding of that comment, that would refer to officials that attend meetings, for example, for a week at the WTO, but not necessarily to the ambassador himself, who will be regulated as a head of mission in terms of Clause 4. So there's a number of officials that travel regularly to international meetings at international organizations. It is also possible that someone can be seconded, for example, for 6 months or a year or even longer periods to international organizations, for example, to work in the office of the Secretary General of the United Nations. So those persons would take up that position as a South African, but their job description and job title would be regulated by that organization. So in our understanding, this does not refer to ambassadors as such.
No, thank you, Oral Khalapa. You persisted me by engaging that issue. There's an issue I thought I'll come back to, which is also of critical importance. It's on page 13, under foreign policy. Then you said it encapsulates national interest. I just spent a minute or two on this one. Which was that? Which one comes first? And my mind says that a national interest comes first for any nation state. It will engage into international relations and work with other countries because it wants to advance its national interest with regard to trade and sometimes military cooperation, etc., etc. Now, I was wondering, the way the formulation is put, and I've not clarified my mind yet, whether we were saying, going to say the bill refers to national interests that can be advanced through foreign policy.
if you hear what I'm trying to say, whether this formulation says what I understand or deliberately doesn't want to say that, doesn't want to be read by others and say, oh, South Africa is selfish like all of us, but countries behave like individuals. They start with themselves. So, maybe we must come back to it. I just thought that I know at some point we were looking, when we were studying it, we were looking at the American foreign policy, particularly the Monroe Doctrine. That's where you'll see the root of American exceptionalism now, which you see now. Because whether they're signing the whatever trade or this thing about the agreement, the climate things, there's always, but what is in it for us as America? If they think at some other point it may catch up with them, their own side, and they're open with it. I'm sorry to appear to be digressing. I'm just saying this foreign policy, what takes precedence, they go together, but is it foreign policy that may not champion national interest? You want to assist?
No, Chairperson, not on the one that on international organizations, the one that Honorable Mahalapo was asking, page 14. Just for clarity in terms of our recording. My understanding was that the Professor Van Dijk was referring to, which I think the department may be able to differentiate between the two, those ambassadors who are also responsible for covering, for representing South Africa in international organizations like the AU, UN, you know, because they are ambassadors, but they have representational duty over an international organization that South Africa is a party to. So maybe if we provide for both so that it's clear which ones we are talking about.
I think just to add before you respond, also the issue, I think it's attaché. Do you call them attaché? As well.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and colleagues. I've tried to go through this as well. Thank you. I don't know if there's a confusion. I thought if it is understood that the Foreign Service is for officials of government who are governed in terms of the Public Service Act, that's the easiest from which to approach the matter. So that if you are not a public servant and governed by the Public Service Act, you won't fall into this unless you are specifically contracted for a 2-year, 3-year or 4-year period to represent the Republic, in which case you'll then be governed by this. And those would be career diplomats. So I thought what Professor Van Dijk could have been referring to there, it could be people, for example, I don't know, colleagues from the department can indicate. There are judges that we sometimes send to The Hague to sit in the fora there. I can't remember. In fact, I think we once had a Justice Moulot who was placed at The Hague for a while. Although it's another branch of government, but his placement there was effectively a representative capacity placement on behalf of the Republic, because the person was there representing the public, although employed in that category. We have to think about how those kinds of people are accommodated here. The courts in Tanzania, the African Human Rights Court in Arusha, for example, at some point there was a time when Justice Mwepe served there. So those kinds of appointments I think we must look at here in terms of how they would be covered. Because sometimes we have people who are appointed in these international institutions, but they are placed there politically in the sense that the Republic, like any country, is asked to make a candidate available. Although they go there in their personal capacities because they are not serving on the bench for argument's sake,
yeah,
but they represent the Republic. Somehow there must be a way of capturing those.
Yeah.
It also then follows that, again, I'm just trying to understand what Professor Van Dijk was dealing with here, when she says those persons who represent South Africa on an ad hoc or permanent basis at international organizations. In my previous capacity, I approved the, well, this one was a secondment, but in the future it may not be a secondment, officials to the ICC, International Criminal Court, to be prosecutors there. At that time we made it easy, it was a secondment, so we seconded them, so in other words they remained in the books of the NPA and therefore remained officials in government. But if officials like that do leave, and they remain employed permanently in those institutions, they then obviously are not officials of government and wouldn't be covered by this particular disposition. But I thought, I could be wrong, but what I thought Professor Van Dijk was dealing with here is that if you send somebody to be an assistant in some capacity to the Secretary General of the United Nations, and it is not a secondment, but a 3-year contract, how would we treat that? Would we treat it as somebody employed in a personal capacity, or would we treat it as somebody sent there for 3 years by South Africa, in which case the person would be contracted for 3 years? It's easy when the person in that that kind of person is taken from government, but what if it's a professor from a university who's asked to be available and is therefore contracted? That becomes to me a politically appointed person and will be covered as we described it. So I think I'm just trying to say you're right in saying this thing must be looked at in terms of understanding what it refers to. In many of the so-called placements in international institutions, they are politically, they are usually, they arise out of political engagement. And then it's up to a country to identify an appropriate person that would then be asked to represent that country. And that decision is usually ever taken politically. That's why there's usually never adverts and there's never interviews. It's somebody, it's people who are made available and CVs are put together and then there's a vetting process. So it would be important. And those people, I'd imagine, if they're not officials of government already, they're given contracts. And the question would be, if that is done, then those clearly would be political appointees, and the question is now how do they get covered here? And I think the colleagues will explain how political appointees get done. It's contractual.
And that includes envoys.
The problem with an envoy, the difference with an envoy is that an envoy can be sent for a week. So, correct me if I'm wrong, for example now we have envoys, high-level envoys of the president who are assigned to assist in Madagascar. Now, those are really contracted on an issue-by-issue basis. It may last 2 weeks, it may last 2 months, it may last 6 months, it may last a year, it may last for 5 years, for the duration of the resolution of that particular issue. Now, during that period, those people are contracted as special envoys, but they are not part of the foreign service per se, because they are not officials. So a special envoy would be different, they are not official. So an envoy is really an emissar. So that is not an official, that's just really a person who is an emissar, but to be able to function needs to be given the protections, which the diplomatic protections, which enables the receiving party to recognize them as the person they can receive and hear from whatever message they may be, otherwise they wouldn't be heard. So that, and they communicate private messages largely. They wouldn't be covered by the foreign service. So they are different to somebody who gets sent to PAP for 3 years to function, but that person is there politically representing South Africa, although employed full-time by PAP. And I think the immediate example, for example, would be Advocate Madasa. If you remember a couple of years back, who left Parliament and was sitting there. You know. So that, because there was no dispensation of this type that is proposed here, the circumstances that became complex. But if this dispensation had been in place, it would have been easier to deal with the situation that arose there, because there would have been a category under which the person fell. So I'm just trying to shape it.
Interesting. Yeah, that's what you want to do. Honorable Ramaphosa.
Yeah, I hear and voice, I hear those need to be regulated and so forth. I just wanted to check with this health article, who, you know, like Dr. Nomonde Zungu, Dr. Mokgali in Brussels. So, are they being also part of the Public Service Act? It's not contracted, or they are not special kind of envoys. So attaches are public servant. You know, like the health attache. Dr. Nomonde Zungu is there in the United Nations. And Dr. Mokgali is there in Brussels, in Brussels. So I really don't know what is the arrangement with that. Okay. That is what I wanted even to check.
And
then
I think we want to get it very clear, and we don't want to have loose ends here. The honorary councils are regulated by the Vienna Convention. It's fine. Then you have spoken about the section 2.2 of contractual basis. That means career vices, political deployees is covered here. You're saying all of them are inclusive here. But what is now remaining? I understand if we send somebody to the United Nations and he or she is employee of the Secretary General. What we are looking for, apart from the attaches from my colleagues, which is the main point, we want to deal with the attaches, is those people who Advocate Menalevin referred to, that you send them there, and then on what basis are they being regulated on? That is where the essence is. The attaches and those people who go as envoys or for a particular purpose, where do they fall in? Because you send an envoy for a month and he gets into a diplomatic incident within that month, who and how do you regulate that thing? You know, is it the president that call him and say come back, or on what basis do they come back? That is the essence of what we need to deal. The example of Advocate Madasa in the Pan-African Parliament, we couldn't be able to deal with it because of on what dispensation was he falling under. Though he was a secondment from Parliament, but he went there, he worked in pub. So on what basis was he, you know, on what, how do you regulate such a thing? So it's about attaches, it's about envoys, it's about those people that goes either on an ad hoc or a permanent basis, but not being specifically ambassadors. How do we deal with them?
Both of you?
Thank you. Tanya would of course add to this.
I was
just advised by the content advisor that I omitted introducing Advocate Soraya Williams. Is that Advocate?
Yes, Soraya Williams.
Okay. She is with us and is going to be with us for quite some time in this process of the bill. She is representing the office of the Chief State Law Advisor. My apology. We met just before we started the meeting, and I just omitted introducing you. My apology.
Thank you
very much. Advocate Devet.
Thank you. Just to focus on the specific questions. The question of attaché is a designation that people that we send abroad would have at a particular meeting or at a particular station. So you would have attaché, you have the health attaché. They usually, the designation usually pertain to those that have a very confined focus or area. So you would have your defense attaché, you would, they would just deal with defense. You would have your health, or your you have agricultural attaché, so trade that very much focus, that's their portfolio. But then you also have people that are designated counselors. There are ministers, plenipotentiary, first secretaries, third secretaries. All of them are regulated in terms of this bill as part of the Foreign Service. Those that are representatives, permanent representatives to the United Nations in New York, in Geneva, in the WTO, or wherever there are international organizations where permanent representatives are appointed, they will also be part of the Foreign Service, members of the Foreign Service, and it is clear as head of mission. They are similar to head of mission, and it's in the definition. So the special envoys, we understand the role of an envoy is for a specific task. That persons are usually based in South Africa. They would travel for a specific opportunity or a specific assignment. When they travel, if they get into trouble, they are regulated by the Diplomatic Immunities and Privileges Act. They enjoy special protection under that. So when there's a problem, they would be regulated. The receiving state will then follow the Vienna Convention on diplomatic relations. So, but Advocate Milani is correct that this is now the opportunity to fill that void that we now see as when we place people or when people are being are assigned to work in a particular organization, it's usually done within the department on the basis of a secondment. But it's not purely secondment as we understand it on a national level. And there the value of this bill will be that there can be specific rules around that. So if somebody is employed, for instance, at the pub, we can have as part of the secondment agreement that that person also have some obligations to feed back into government. So, but it's not possible at the moment, and this bill will provide or assist in regulating that. It's not a void, but there is for sure room for improvement. Thank you.
It's more or less speaking now, it's legally speaking. We will follow the teachers and say pedagogically speaking. Then the lawyers will see.
I was just saying, just to remind members, what advocate is that is saying and what the discussion by members is driving to. The committee has made recommendations more than once to say South Africa should fill its quota in international organizations. So this is the point where there must be some form of a regulation in terms of those people that the committee has been recommending that South Africa must make and deliberate effort to actually have people posted in different organizations at different levels. So if those people go there, then what happens? So I think this is, I was just adding to that to say, actually it follows from what the committee has already been recommending. So it's for it to see where the
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to use another example of what they were trying to solve, the colleagues are correct, I agree with them 100%. At the Bight Bridge, which is the culmination of some of the problems we have there, is the BMA now, the Border Management Agency. But what you currently have there without the BMA yet is that you have officials from SARS, Customs, from the police, from Home Affairs, from different units. But they are all in one building and servicing different people. If there's an incident, a service issue, there's always a difficulty about who the official reports to. And there's usually a conflict. A customs official would say, I don't report to a Home Affairs person. when somebody goes to Home Affairs to say help this particular person.
Yeah.
And HQ has to be called and vice versa. So the governance of that building on behalf of government gets a little bit complicated and disorganized because there isn't one center that's holding and giving direction. So similarly in embassies, that's what the colleagues are referring to say you then have attachés from health, DCI representatives, and people from other departments. But physically, for the day-to-day operations, they are in a building under the head of DECO. If an issue arises, currently, it's possible to have an official there, a South African, saying to the ambassador, I don't report to you. I'm from this department.
Mm-hmm.
So the question becomes, but then who governs you while you're here and operating from this building? So to avoid those conflicts and those things that arise, the Foreign Service Bill then seeks to say any person who is South African who leaves the territory of the Republic to represent the Republic wherever they are, for the duration that they are there, they will report according to the structure that this bill then creates, which is the head of mission, an ambassador, high commissioner, as the case may be. So during that time, although you may be from a different department and not DECO, we are there representing government, and they are then subjected to the jurisdiction of the head of that mission during that period of time. So that's effectively what this means. So for attachés, that's where they'll be. So nobody talks about their department while they're up there. They deal with the framework that is being created here. So I just thought that clarifying that. Thank you.
In the public
remind me of the one-time policy.
And in the, that's right now we are having the border management authority in the part of entry.
Yeah.
So DECO will deal with the proper way of, let's say, accountability. And then coming to part of entry, the border management authority comes in. So now we, as this government, we are really working. We are putting things in perspective. And people are in a hurry. And they must understand that issues are being processed. And when we process things, we make some errors in there. And there's no one who is really perfect, because we are processing to be perfect. On our way to only really making those acts and bills, we are perfecting in order that we must make a safe, a peace, stable a continent and the entire world. We are going there to check us there. Amanda to that.
And I would the input you have made is very important. It is unrelated, however, to the issue under discussion. You know, if we can remind ourselves, just after we dealt with the deal after August, and then we invite the people who are dealing with the border management authority that is supposed to be established to come and make a presentation here, because it's a, and I've said it unrelated now, I seem to be lecturing tonight, it's a multidisciplinary outreach which is supposed to regulate, you know, your police, your home affairs, your whatever, at the border, to ensure that goods that come from outside or the deep South Africa, that are harming the country, whether they come inside or they are leaving the country, they are harming the country. Now, a committee like this should be interested, at least in knowing what is happening. But it's unrelated to this, the issues that they were talking about. Then if we can find time and space for a presentation for our own education, it's going to be very good for us. But you couldn't believe it.
The continent.
Yes. Can you?
In addition to what they are saying, also as a comment, we must have a bilateral council with the Committee of Home Affairs, because the border management is completely big. There's nothing in front of this committee.
No. You don't seem to be convinced about what I was saying. It's unrelated. It's unrelated to this bill. Because this bill is referring to a machine. What advocates in the other one talking about? Is a person who is in France, but is a Home Affairs person, or is a DCI person, is a trade attaché, and does something there. And when the ambassador or high commissioner wants to prevail over the person, then the person says, no, but the Home Affairs brought me here. Now what you're talking about is at the border letter.
Yes.
So it's not the same thing. It's important for a discussion because we are international relations, but I'm saying in relation to the bill, what we are talking about is what is obtaining in the embassy.
No, sir, you didn't understand this. I was saying that the deal, this one, this committee itself, because they want, I think, one command outside the country. So that people...
The ambassador.
Yeah, the ambassador is one command. And when you enter the borders of South Africa, it's another deal, border management, which also addresses those issues. So they are complementary. So that the issues of singular command, foreign service bill, it is in the foreign country. That is one command. And when you enter our country, the border management authority is also, that is in the Home Affairs, is going to also be one command. So we are acting with bills to address this group issue of similar command. So I'm just, you didn't understand me. Yes, it's a different thing, but we are talking about one command in the civic world, which is outside the country, and when you enter, this border management bill is also going to ensure that there is a single command, whereby it's complementary in a way that civic bill, it's about the public service people. Even with the border management, it's also public service. But here is Home Affairs that is responsible. That side is international relations, and that is the it's complementary.
And Holland.
Yes. I don't get into the debate.
Yes.
We'll deal with it. That's not
yeah.
Over conversation.
Mm.
Okay. Any further clarification?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Mike.
Thank you very much, Chair. If we can move, we were at the bottom of page 15, the comment of Mr. Clay on the definition of support services. In our reading of this comment, this would again bring LRPs, locally recruited personnel, within the scope of this bill, which, as already explained, is legally problematic. So we propose to rather deal with LRPs within the context of Clause 9. The comment of Professor Van Wyk on the amendment of section, I'm now at the bottom, at the top of page 16. An amendment to Section 2.3 of the bill to include reference to and the mandate of the South African Council on International Relations, the CIFR, and the Association of Former Ambassadors, High Commissioners, and Chief Representatives. In relation to that comment, this is exactly the purpose of Clause 7 of the bill, to regulate those types of entities or organizations in terms of Clause 7. Section 2, according to Professor Van Beek's comment, should also include reference to South Africa's mediators in international conflicts.
Our comment to that is, as discussed, currently those mediators are not necessarily part of DIRCA's establishment. Their role may be regulated by international conventions, but as discussed, that could be something that DIRCA could look at to identify where should there be any gaps or any improvements that can be made. That is something that could be considered. The definition of consular services, a comment raised by the Department of Home Affairs, they raise the concern that South Africa will, that DIRCA will now be responsible, can be seen to be responsible for key Home Affairs competencies such as the issuing of passports. To accommodate this concern, we have done further consultations, both with Home Affairs and internally. We have a new proposal to make it very clear that DIRCA does not intend on issuing passports or identity documents or any similar services, but that the services that are being discussed are those services that are mentioned in the relevant international conventions, and that will be further explained in a document that we will develop, the proposed title of which is the Guidelines for the Provision of Consular Services. There's a comment from Mr. Martin Bowen. It's similar on the consular services, so this matter is we've already commented on. The Department of Labor raised issues of the number of officials of minority groups and women. We'd like to comment that the department adheres to all legislation pertaining to equity, which includes this aspect. The Department of Labor also raised the issue of LRPs and the employment of South Africans in the diaspora as LRPs. So LRPs of South African nationality are currently being employed in South Africa's missions if they meet the requirements for a particular post. When we were in Canada, there were also some of the LRPs were South African nationals that were working at the mission. DIRCA should have an unfettered discretion to place officials of particular expertise where needed. It is important for a coherent foreign service that there should be consultation before officials of departments are placed abroad. This will ensure that the interests of South Africa is best served. As the minister will have overall responsibility for the conduct of international relations, it flows that the department will have the final say in the placement of all members of the foreign service. It will also be recalled that the clause in the bill dealing with requirements for members of the Foreign Service is at the end of clause 2, makes provision that all transfers must be approved by the Director General. That means that the final authority that actually gives the go-ahead for a partner department official or a DIRCA official to actually start the transfer process to a department abroad is that approval letter by the Director General of DIRCA.
Just follow that. Members, I was advised that lunch is ready to be served. That's not in my head on that one. Can I hear from you?
The working lunch. The working lunch. Can tap and come. The working lunch. Individual members can just progress while the work is continuing. It's a finger one, you mean? That's for time,
we are here.
Yeah.
So, or let's pray for us to have fun.
Let's
come here and then we'll do the presentation on Martha.
Okay.
Just shorten the time. Okay, let's come back at 5:50. Pretty short.
No, I'm Thank you.